The morning show on Trib Life Radio is brought to you by the Team Spanos Group of Raymond James, recently highlighted as the face of financial guidance in Pittsburgh Magazine. The Trib Life Radio Triple Threat.
He wants three. You know that's a trip, triple.
And Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and now Tim Benz, right here on Trib Life Radio.
It's Steelers-Bengals week, and all our playoff coverage is brought to you by Goodrich & Geist, pursuing justice for real people online at goodrichandgeist.com. But I don't know what's a bigger deal, guys. Steelers-Bengals or Jag-Off of the Year voting? And, Guy, are we going to do it all in one day? I think we neglected to start the voting a couple days ago in all this excitement.
Well, yeah, I think we should do it more in more than one day. So at least two, maybe take it through Friday, announce one Friday. Can't do
okay.
it all in one day.
Tim, you're down with that? We got a three-day process
working
then here?
Through. I really don't make the rules around here. I jumped in late. You guys have this five-year tradition.
We screwed up. We should have been doing it Monday, Tuesday, and one named it today. But
all right. Well, then
well,
let's just...
Ryan Fitzpatrick would have gotten a lot of votes if we started on Monday, don't you think? He would have, out of nowhere, been a Jag-Off of the Year candidate with the way he played and how he helped the Steelers get in the playoffs.
Actually, I think
that's
he would jag be a jag-on.
Well,
yeah.
jag-on from that perspective. But, I mean, if you're just looking at it from a strictly how-did-you-screw-up kind of point of view, like empirically, if you're not looking at it from, I guess you got to do it from a Pittsburgh angle, just the name of the phrase, jag-off. But, man, Ryan Fitzpatrick screwing his team out of the playoffs with his own play, that's something.
Probably Antoine Blake would be getting votes if we did a weekly award. I feel like we've taken so much so many emails about Blake.
I'm telling you, it's the great uniter. You can disagree with anybody about anything on Twitter right now, and if you live in Pittsburgh and you bring up the name Antoine Blake, it brings you under the same tent in some way.
Or just drop a free Boykin, right? A hashtag free Boykin?
It's tough to do that now because he played in every sub-package down last week. He is officially freed.
Every sub-package down he was in there, that's official?
I saw that tweeted out last night, I believe. Steeler Depot said that Brandon Boykin was in every sub-package snap against the Browns.
Wow. Okay, so does that mean that's the way it will be from here on out, or is that part of the rotation, or is that a second-half thing? Because, you know, Tomlin gushed yesterday about, well, we don't tell you guys everything. We got a rotation. We got a plan. It might change this week.
Well, I don't know how much more they could get Blake out unless they start actually finally putting Boykin in on first down with Willie Gay.
Yes.
Not even bother with Blake. And at that point, if you just reduce him to special teams, not that I would complain. That would be fine by me. But so far, the rotation just seems to be a little bit less of Antoine Blake every week. And it's funny, that's still way too much.
Is he the biggest worry for Steelers fans this week? Blake and the possibility of A.J. Green and the matchup and I guess you would got to say, and Guy, we've talked about this all week, that the Steelers offense themselves have had so many worries. And you had Roethlisberger on Brand X calling out Martavis yesterday on his radio show. You know, maybe there's more of a worry that the Steelers' strength won't be a strength.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's that or if it's Blake. What's the biggest concern this week?
Well, I think it's been what it's been since July, and that's their defense. And I don't think that it's just Blake. I think that when you look at what happened in the first game, A.J. McCarron has not passed for 200 yards in a start yet. So to think that he's going to put up huge numbers against them, I don't think is going to happen. But could there be one mistake in the sec? Hey, you know, it's a playoff game. I expect this to be decided by probably less than a touchdown. One 65-yard bomb on a screwed-up assignment or just a physically beaten corner could end your season. So I think that remains the biggest worry. I think Ben is smart enough to know whether Martavis Bryant needs a pat in the ass or a kick in the ass, and I think he's calculated that right now he needs a kick in the ass. I don't think he would do that if he thought that he wouldn't respond to it. That said, that stuff makes me uncomfortable leading into the biggest game of the year. I think it's generally better left unsaid, but his production has fallen completely off to the point where, you know, you blame Roethlisberger for looking to Antonio Brown too much. Well, maybe part of the reason he's looking there is Brown catches the ball and Bryant doesn't. Bryant breaks off routes and causes interceptions that Ben gets blamed by. I would probably, you know, I thought that Tomlin's answer was kind of smarmy yesterday by, wouldn't you throw to him more? Well, maybe I would throw to him more.
That's a good point. Now, Roethlisberger's just met with the larger media over at the facility on the Southside, guys, and Chris Adamski just tweeted this out. Ben on his message to Martavis, quote, "I felt like we need him. I love that guy like a little brother. I want him to step up," end quote. And he says, Tim, they talked privately on Tuesday. So good move or bad move to publicly call out Martavis Bryant to light a fire under his ass?
Why not? Because whatever else isn't working. I would imagine if he loves him like a little brother, then that infers he's had these conversations with him in private before and it just hasn't worked. And either by telling him in advance or just through his own analysis, he figures the next best thing to do is try to go public with it. The concern that I've got with Martavis Bryant is you take him out of the mix. Now all of a sudden we're back to week one again where we're talking about what this does to the offense because of the pecking order. So, you know, if Antonio Brown is always option number one, that's fine. If Bryant is supposed to be option number two and like Le'Veon Bell is supposed to be option number three, or D'Angelo Frim is supposed to be option number three out of the backfield. Well, those guys are all gone now. So now Heath Miller kind of becomes option number two, or Marcus Wheaton becomes option number two, and DHB is like option number four. Now it doesn't seem like you've got that vaunted of an offense anymore all of a sudden. You know, if this guy is going to be this much of a flake moving forward, even beyond the suspensions and the drug stuff, it's time to get Sammy Coates ready. You know, it's time to get him ready this offseason. I'm not saying for this game, but I mean this offseason, that needs to be a priority. Is make sure you actually do have something in this insurance plan that you drafted in the third round might need to be cashed in on, so make sure it can go.
Yeah, they admitted directly they drafted Sammy Coates because of the Bryant issue, right? Because of his drug issue. And we haven't seen him much this year. There have been examples of players that have just emerged in the playoffs. If you remember, Nate Washington in 2005 was huge. I think he caught his first ball in like the Denver game, didn't he? Or maybe the week leading up to it prior. But I think that would be an option too. If Martavis is letting you down, you got to go to plan B, C, or D. But you're right, Tim. Early in the year when they were without Bryant, DHB was one of those plans, and he wasn't good enough. I mean, that probably cost. I don't know if it cost him the game in New England, but he dropped the ball in the end zone.
He didn't drop. He stepped in the end line. But I mean,
right.
Scobie doesn't miss the two field goals, that's less of a big story. I think that's still more on Scobie and the utter defensive ineptitude trying to cover Rob Gronkowski. But yeah, that was an unfortunate play.
Tell us what you think is a bigger worry for the Steelers, their offense or the secondary coming into the weekend. SportsTalk@TribWeb.com. And when you talk offense, you got to talk the running game now. Roethlisberger also just said, Guy, whether it's Todman, Fitz, or Will Johnson, the good thing is they've been here all year. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. So that's not necessarily praise of his running backs, but at least he's familiar with this group that will go in there. Certainly sounded yesterday at the presser like D'Angelo Williams is not going to play this week, right?
And it also points back to the disaster that was last year, assigning a guy and trying to get him, you know, familiar with the offense, and had a big play in losing the game, not just because he didn't produce, but because of the interception off his hands and everything else. So I'm not surprised at them saying that. And the way they're all talking about Fitz makes me think they know that Williams isn't going to play.
Williams was seen in a walking boot today in the facility. We got to get Dr. Chow on that one. Tim, will you vote Dr. David Chow for Jag Off of the Year? I was thinking about this morning, too. I was expecting you to come out with the first Chow vote.
No, I'm not going to vote for Chow for Jag Off of the Year. He's not that influential. I think already people have sort of gotten away from his magic, this voodoo belief that people have. He's got some sort of power. I think it's kind of run its course already, except for you. You're still on board. But
oh, I love the guy.
To be honest with you, are we going right now? Is this our vote? Is this where I'm supposed to cast my vote?
No, I guess if guys extend it to Friday, we can kind of let the process play out here a bit.
Waiting. I don't know. I can't think of a Jagoff move bigger than the guy stealing the puck from the kid when Penguins played Buffalo in and of itself, but it's not that overly important. It is just the ultimate in being a Jagoff. I can't think of anything more blatantly. And then not to realize, you know, maybe in your enthusiasm, you take the puck and then you see, oh, crap, I stole that from him, and then you give it back to him. And then to taunt the kid and everything, that was the biggest singular 30 seconds of Jagoffery of the year, in my opinion.
Yeah, the biggest single one to me would have been the kids taking out the ref in Texas.
Yeah, that's big, too.
That would have been the biggest singular one. But if we're talking Jagoff of the year, I think it's got to be something impactful, something lasting, something that resonated beyond just the moment. So I'm going to go with the NFL. I'm going to go with the league and how it botched the entire Deflategate investigation. You know, I know that Deflategate itself first broke. Well, no, it did break in the year 2015.
Yeah.
So that's plenty eligible. But the way that they...
You can't go Goodell, you got to go whole league?
I guess I can say Goodell. If you want me to say Goodell, I'll say Goodell. But I just feel like whether it was him or his underlings, how they botched the sting, how they leaked the information, how they blew it in terms of the Wells report, how they weren't smart in approaching the legal angle of everything... Just they and over punishing and the decision to over punish as much as they did. If they didn't go for four games like they never should have, if they didn't try to make it a first round pick and $1 million fine, if they had just been more real instead of trying to make a statement and play it up, then I think we would have avoided the mess, the quagmire that was the entire offseason for Deflategate. So
not only the league, Tim, but the officials. How were the officials in that game alerted to possible nefarious behavior? And they had
part of the reason why I want to extend it beyond just Goodell, because they are part of the NFL. They are an extension of the league. This was a league botched thing from Jump Street.
Yeah, if they told you to be aware that there might be something funny going on, you lose track of the footballs. And you come out on the field, and here's this fat guy who has the bag over in the corner who just came out of the bathroom. And you're like, no problem. We'll test him at halftime. And you just let the first half go on? That's incredible incompetence and jagoffery. And I don't think that's Goodell-related necessarily. I mean, but I'm sure
Except
he was aware of it, right?
Bad people hire bad people. You know, I'm serious. Bad management leads to bad execution, and we all know how bad he is at his job, aside from just making the owner's money, but then again, who can't do that? So I'm not surprised that he's got ineptitude oozing off of him. I mean, the guy who friggin' sold the football online, you know, every misstep along the way that distracted from did Brady's underlings take the air out of the footballs or not, at his behest. That could have just been the storyline, but they botched it so severely and so overplayed it that they turned it into something it didn't need to, and by extension it wound up in court and they lost.
I don't disagree. That's a heavy hitter. That's a major player. If we're going to go for Pittsburgh sports, though, I think I'm leaning Joe Madden.
Well, you know what? You know, if they didn't botch the investigation, maybe Brady doesn't play in week one and the Steelers don't need the friggin' Jets to lose. You know what I mean? Maybe they beat Jimmy Garoppolo on their own in week one.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that for a while. It's a little, I guess now that they got into the playoffs, it's not as big of a deal. But, yeah, that would have felt even worse today if they were.
Although Jagoff of the week doesn't always have to affect Pittsburgh, and Jagoff of the year hasn't in the past either. Barry Bonds didn't affect Pittsburgh other than he once played here and he got it.
That's true. And, hey, Goodell is the reigning Jagoff of the year, so he could get...
Is he? I didn't even...
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
He could win a second award. Last year was more for the Ray Rice fiasco. You know, that was the central part of that whole vote a year ago. But, Guy, as much of a Jagoff as the puck schmuck is, and I think that is a potential winner. I mean, that's strong enough on its own merits.
Puck schmuck. He already got titles for everybody. I like it.
Oh, we give him puck schmuck that first week.
Yeah.
He's been wearing that for a while.
We have some heavy hitters. What about Britt McHenry? What about the just think of Britt McHenry?
Well, what about that network for letting her to continue? If a male did the same thing, you think he'd still be working there?
Well, funny you bring that up.
If Adam Schefter was caught doing the exact same thing, saying the exact same thing, do you think he'd still be working there?
Right. Good question. And the answer is no.
Funny you bring that up.
But the painted pony struts around in her stiletto heels and her jeans that are two sizes too small, shaking her ass in front of all the players so they do interviews with her, and she keeps her job.
Taylor wears jeans.
I can't stand. She
small,
walks
too.
Into the room or onto the field, and I want to just like stick my finger in my throat and puke on the grass.
Like that South Park with Terrence and Phillips. They just reach out and slap Brooke Shields. Whack! It's funny you bring that up because if I were to just do one for the week, who my Jagette of the week would be, it'd be Colleen Dominguez, another female sideline reporter. She's suing Fox for age discrimination because she doesn't get any plum gigs anymore. She still is under contract. She's still being paid, but apparently she's like not getting any jobs anymore. And she says that it's because she's gotten old, to which I say, no shit. I wish if I was the defense in this case, if I was the Fox, I could like the Fox lawyers, I could enter the "hey, no shit" defense, because how do you think you got your job? mean, did you get your job
right
because you were an ace reporter, you know, that people tuned in and listened to for sports information, or was it because you were a hot chick with a Latina last name? What do you think? And now to play this both sides of the coin thing where, you know why you got your job in the first place, and now you don't have those assets anymore, and you're supposed to keep your job. I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. You know, just because ESPN has done that with some of its female reporters doesn't mean Fox is obligated to do so. You know, you are judged based on intangibles in that business. You know, I can't help it if they don't feel like you don't move the needle anymore. Yep. And never has there been a situation like in our business where you or me or Ken or Stan or, you know, Madden or any talk show host in Pittsburgh could say, well, you fired me for intangible reasons. Well, the ratings are tangible. Maybe they feel the ratings are tangible where they are, and she's part of the issue, and they can get somebody better who could do the job different. You know, if you're a guy in sports... And
if she lost her job and wasn't being paid, you know, even if she was hired for her looks originally, you still shouldn't be able to fire somebody just because of their age. I understand what you're saying. The point of it is, I wish I would reach a point in my life where I was still getting paid and didn't have to do anything anymore. Just for 1 week, for 1 month. Like some of the people in this city, John Steigerwald, got to do for a year. And I know John didn't want to do that. He hated it. But you know, I've reached the stage. You want to pay me and you don't want to use me anymore, go right ahead.
If we were going to vote for the weekly award, maybe Burfict would get one just to preview Steelers-Bengals.
Yeah.
How strong of a weekly award winner was he back for the last meeting between these two teams, Pittsburgh and Cincy? I wonder if he'll get any J-O-T-Y votes. But we will try not to influence anybody. Actually, we probably will at some point because I'm going to find that plantar fasciitis quote and just
I was thinking about Joe Torre not even looking at the video until a more higher profile player gets hurt before they try to make a decision on that type of play. I was thinking about something with the Penguins, just in the what happened since last. It was actually about December 20th of 14, but the calendar year of 2015 for them was just one disaster after another. I just don't know who to pinpoint the whole thing on.
Yeah, that's a good point.
From the team going up for sale to them not getting accomplished what they need to do for the development rights to, you know, the hirings and firings and the on-ice performance and everything. It was a disaster. I just can't think of one particular. It's kind of like unless you just voted the entire entity, and I don't like doing that.
And since we're on the Penguins a little bit, we got to talk about that game last night.
Oh, my God.
On the Team Spanos Group of Raymond James, Trib Live Radio Morning Show, Guy Junker, Tim Benz, Ken Laird. They've been playing pretty well lately, and that was a hell of an entertaining game. Were you guys both in attendance?
All three of us were there.
JT was there?
Yeah.
What a game. I mean, even the first period where the shots were 7-7, it was just good hockey, wasn't it?
I don't know. See, I didn't get that much of a vibe of it in the first period.
Yeah, I thought the first period was more of a – I even said to Tim, that was kind of – because Syracuse basketball
ragged.
Was coming on, and he said, now my attentions are going to be divided. And I said, you know, if we got another period like the first, I'd rather watch the basketball. I mean,
I enjoyed it. It was
crisp.
You're right.
It was
quick movement.
I mean, there's always going to be, you know, a hit or two. There wasn't like a lot of dirty, chippy crap. It was hockey. And it was good hockey.
It was like Olympic hockey.
I mean, if you had Columbus playing Carolina in 3-on-3 overtime, it's pretty entertaining. You have those two teams play. I mean, that's like us playing street hockey out in the driveway. I know it's, it's difficult for the players, and I wasn't totally on board with it as far as it being a real representation of how a game should be decided. But it's a fun watch, man.
What were the players thinking afterwards? I mean, they got to be disappointed they didn't get the 2 points with as many great chances as they had. And they were just totally gassed on the game winner, right? Like, Letang just quit. He let the guy go right around him.
Well, here's what Letang said about the 3-on-3, if you want to hear it, because I did talk to him about it. I talked to Fleury, too.
When the league designed 3-on-3, is that the best-case scenario? Is that what they were looking for, do you think?
Maybe. It was exciting. You always want to have the win on your side, but we traded chances. We had tons of scoring chances. The goalie made great save, so Flower did great save, but it was a quick shot, so it's pretty exciting for the fan, I guess.
I guess. It was exciting.
You had to look at social media. There are people that don't even cover hockey that were chiming in on this, like football guys who were chiming in on this, how great it was. And It's still – the funny thing to me, it did hit me after the game was over. Didn't we hear the same things the first year about the shootout? Oh, did you see that move? Oh, did you see that save? This is great. What a great idea the shootout was.
We did.
Yes, we did. And then the hockey old-timers killed it because they just felt guilty about their own success.
Well, I think too many games started being decided by it. I think people still enjoyed watching it. And that's what I like about this, at least less games. Now when you go to a shootout, I have found a rejuvenated interest in shootouts because not as many games are going to it. And almost the problem with overtime when it first started was almost every game ended in a tie. Nobody was taking any chances. So that's why they went to, you know, the shootout anyway. And then the 4-on-4 became the reason to try to avoid the shootout. Now the 3-on-3. I just think they're trying to avoid getting to that boring conclusion of what a 2-2 game would be before there was overtime at all.
I love it. It's just been a total success. I mean,
yeah,
I guess
from the first game of the, I think you were watching the Flyers and somebody the first opening night went to it, and you were gushing about it.
I mean, the whole first month, any game that had went to overtime, I went back and watched it just on the replay the next day. I've stopped doing that, so maybe it will lose its luster over time. But how many chances did you count in overtime? I mean, Letang had 3 or 4.
Hossa had a great one. It was a fantastic save.
Kane had one from
Kane had
the
one.
Flurry save.
Letang had one.
There were,
Kessel had several.
I think there were 3 really good saves from Crawford and 2 from Fleury. Before
I think there were 10 total shots, which is that's part of the reason the old overtime would have like 1 shot for one team, 2 for the other. You know what I mean? That's part of the reason why it didn't work.
Like, who left the building unhappy at that finale?
Well, a lot of people left the building before Letang tied it in the first place, but that's neither here nor there.
I think both teams felt satisfaction and it was a fun game to watch, but let's say the Penguins blew a 2-goal lead in the third period and lost it in overtime. Even with the entertainment value, I think you're more pissed. It's a satisfying point for them because Chicago was 16-0-1 going into the third period when they had a lead. So just coming back to tie a guy that's got 4 shutouts in his last 10 games and leads the league in shutouts, that's a hell of a third period just to get to that. And then you got the entertainment. So I think the Penguins kind of, when you score a goal with 2:50 to go, I think they kind of stole a point from defending cup champs in a very entertaining way. And I think that's why everybody was kind of happy.
Even you had tweeted out after 2 periods, Guy, about Crawford, and I sent back a Crawford is Crawford. I can see why fans were frustrated, right? It was back to, again, they couldn't bury their chances.
David Perron is David Perron. He's becoming what he was last year. I mean, I think the guy's working a little bit harder. I got frustrated with him last year because I thought he floated a lot. My God, he gets a steal and goes in on a clean breakaway and doesn't even get the shot on goal. How different of a game is it maybe if he makes it 1-0 there? And, of course, later on, he set Sid up perfectly, and Sid fumbles the pass in the slot. And then Sid, had a couple of, in the third period, he was great. He scored a goal, almost got another, but he had some chances. I think they had the better of the chances, clearly, through 2 periods. They were out shooting him for sure, but I think the prime scoring chances favored the Penguins, too. It was a lot of what we had seen through much of this year in terms of offensive frustration.
Yeah, but Perron had the direct assist right on the Crosby goal,
yeah.
Which was mostly Letang. That was a beautiful breakout of his zone.
I said that to Tim. I said that's where people get frustrated with Letang when he takes a penalty, which the one he was called last night, I thought was a terrible call. When he misses the net on the power play from the point, but that is exact. Their defense could not get back fast enough because he got the puck to Crosby so quickly, and Crosby had the open space and zings it over the shoulder. If I can't remember who was on the left side going down to his knees when he took that shot, but if that's even 1 second later, that deflects off his stick up into the net. And that's the difference in having a guy like Daly or like Letang in there as to having 6, flat-footed, defensive-minded defensemen.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, the goal that Crosby scored I thought was a ton about Letang. Like you said, nice drop pass from David Perron, but I thought Letang made that happen. I thought it was kind of ironic that he was able to score the game-tying goal, slapping a puck that just never settled down for him. That was part of the reason maybe why it went in. Crawford, I don't think he ever saw that cleanly.
They said that wasn't the play that they had drawn up, but the puck bubbled on him, and he shot it.
Yeah, it was a weird goal, right? I think Crawford saw it. Was he screened on that or just?
There was a lot of traffic. I don't know if he saw it, but he shot it on edge, so probably butterflied some or didn't come in the way he thought it would. But that's what Letang said, that was not the play, but the puck hopped up on him, and he saw a lot of traffic in front, so he decided just to hell with it to shoot it.
Well, game one of two of the Scuderi homage is in the books, and the Pens get a point out of it.
Boy, what an invested emotional tribute during the first television timeout. Man, that was something. I mean, that if you thought you got moved to tears, the Pascal Dupuy.
What was Scuderi's reaction on the bench? Didn't look like
I don't know if he got to see it happen so fast.
No, he took his glove off and he waved to the crowd in kind of a sheepish little way, yeah, and which was nice. A lot of guys don't even acknowledge it at all. But, my God, they showed you know, his stops in the crease against Detroit, and they showed you him hoist the cup, and it was over.
That was it.
If you're going to do it, do it. If you're not going to do it, leave it go.
That must have been all Jim Rutherford could find. They probably said, hey, Jim, would you put together a package for us?
Well, you're picking up a third of his salary. You couldn't pay the people to do the editing.
Give us your thoughts on the Pens win last night. Their overtime loss, I should say. SportsTalk@TribWeb.com.
I would say, though, even more half-hearted than the editing to get that piece together for Scuderi was the attempt to boo him every time he had the puck. That lasted,
well, I didn't even notice it.
Two shifts? And it would be like two or three boo, like, you know, little boos in the different corners of the building, and that was it. I don't think people knew that he was on the team. I don't think people knew what his number was. As Guy tweeted out, it was 4+7, 4 with the Pens, 7 with the Kings. Me, I thought that was either his age or his plus minus his last stint here. I don't know.
Well, we had an emailer yesterday who pointed out Scuderi's not been playing at all. Michael said if you look at his time on ice since joining the Hawks, it's really been trending down. He got scratched in his eighth game there.
He's averaging 11 minutes a game. He was averaging 17 and a half when he was here. So he's down about 5-6 minutes. And he's been playing with Roosevelt, and Roosevelt was scratched last night.
Yeah, they scratched Roosevelt for him, and I wonder what that video tribute would have been like. That probably would have been longer.
All right, let's get some mail going here on Jagoff of the Year voting. By the way,
interesting though that you had the little Freudian slip there, Ken, and said the Penguins win last night first.
I know
it kind of feels like one, you know. But now I hope they just hope they can get at least a point tonight. Chicago's only allowed 33 goals in 21 home games. So that's,
and I did talk to Fleury, by the way, too, Ken. If you wanted to hear from him,
Let's hear from Fleury.
Is he playing tonight?
The plan was to have Fleury play again. I thought it was. Well, we'll find out. I don't know if they're going to – probably not going to do a game-day skate after that, right? Well, here's what Fleury said.
When the league designed 3-on-3, was that the nightmare scenario as a goaltender you had in mind there?
Oh, jeez. it's not the easiest part, that's for sure. No, they want more goals, and I think that's a way to do it. But it's fun when you win, but they suck when you don't.
As far as hosting the save he made on him in overtime, can you kind of take us through that one a little bit? And when you made that stop, did you think things were on your side?
It's close. Yeah, goalie made a few good saves too. And I saw him there. He had a little bit of time. I didn't want to. He's got good hands, good patience. You know, I was just trying to wait him out and maybe throw something he doesn't see too much. You know, and it worked out okay. Just to get to know where everybody's at, right? And guys have a lot of time, a lot of room, and guys that are on the ice are, most of them, very skilled, fast, and makes it tough for the goalie to figure it out, but still wish I would have stopped that last one, though.
From your vantage point, did it look like things really picked up after Sid's goal to get you back in there? The offense seemed to generate a couple really good quality chances within the next 3 minutes thereafter.
Yeah, it was nice, you know. There was still a lot of time to be played, and the crowd got into it too, and was getting a little louder in the building, and you know, we kept bringing it to them, and finally a big goal by Chris at the end there.
I'll say this about Sid's goal. Boy, that really seemed to wake him up, and Sullivan said exactly the same thing after the game was over. When he scored, they followed up 10 seconds later. He rang one off the pipe with a backhand, you know, one of his patented Crosby wicked backhands, and then Bonino came close on that exchange with Sheary. I'm still not sure how they managed to mess that empty net up. And who had the other one in between? Was there another chance from Sid, maybe? Sid and Kunitz?
Malkin.
Was it Malkin in between?
Malkin cut over in the slot and actually got a little hook from
Anisimov?
Anisimov, yeah. I thought there could have been a penalty. It was a scoring opportunity late in a tied game. If there's ever a time to call the penalty, it's there. And they let that go. And, of course, Sid got hooked early in the game, too.
But between the huge save
alone
that
Crawford
made a huge save at the 10-minute mark. Huge save. Remember that one? Right at exactly 10 minutes. So between, like, the 13-minute mark, roughly, when Sid scored, and the big save from Crawford, there were 3-4 quality chances for the Penguins in that 4-minute stretch.
I think they took over the game. Once Sid scored, and then overtime, of course, was a crapshoot both ways. This is the one, I was sitting there thinking, and it got down to minute 13 before it ended. I was looking forward to a shootout this time. I mean, if you can imagine Taves and Kane and Malkin and Crosby and those two goalies, I think that shootout would have been just added to the tremendous night that it already was.
And I got confused on the goal itself. I actually thought that they blew
second
it.
Shot was the goal.
I thought the second shot was
the goal.
I did
too.
Goal.
I thought the first one went off the crossbar.
I thought it went off the crossbar and went right over eventually to Kane and what's his name there that scored the game winner for Chicago?
Panarin. Yeah.
Was celebrating for no reason. I was laughing because he's skating behind the cage celebrating. I'm thinking, what's he celebrating about? Kane just scored the goal. He thought it went in, but no, it was the original shot, and it was a good call.
What a find sick. He is for them. He undrafted, yeah. Man, playing in St. Petersburg last year. Jeez. He could be the rookie of the year.
Yeah, I know. They were comparing him to Taves a little bit on SportsCenter with, what's his name, Melrose. Like, he's the next Jonathan Taves. I don't know about that, but he does look good. His hands look good. That was a hell of a roof job.
And was his the shot that buried into the pad so loud that people thought it was a save by Fleury? One of the two goals, I can't remember if it was Seabrook's goal or his.
His first one.
Yeah, he shot it into the net, and it wedged into the pad so hard, it sounded like a goalie save off the pads.
It might have gone off Fleury's blocker there, didn't it?
It did.
But then nobody could find the puck for a second, and everybody thought it was a save, but then you realized it was wedged into the pad.
I said to Tim, I wondered if that would have went in had Fleury not hit it, because it originally looked to me like it was going wide and his dive over deflected it in, but we were on that near side. So, and then when I saw the reverse angle, it would have went in anyway. He just didn't get enough of it with the blocker to kind of hit him in the fist, it looked like, below the blocker where he was holding a stick.
Well, as far as the Penguins' question to throw out, 3-on-3, I guess, in the evaluation of it after a night like that, or more of a big picture Penguins approach? What kind of feedback would you like from the fans today on that one?
I think everybody's going to love it now, and then I think that a couple games of import are going to be decided later this season on a wacky 3-on-3, bad line change, or something of that sort, and people will stop having the same enthusiasm about it, like they did with the shootout.
If it affects the playoff race, and you know it directly. Yeah.
You're going to get, I can't believe a playoff spot was decided by 3-on-3 the same way you did with shootout.
Okay, but last night, is there any shame in losing? I mean, if you have scores, if you're the Penguins, you got to bury one of those early chances.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't cry about it. That's what you should love to play, 3-on-3 overtime, given the skill set you have. And
yeah, but the Blackhawks could say the same thing. They had their chances, too, with great scores.
Yeah, and they're 8-4 in overtime, and the Penguins are 4-5 now. So it's on you. You just got to be better at it. I like it, but I admit I'm caught in a short-term, just visceral reaction to what's been. It just, you go from 5-on-5 and all the structure of the game to that. It's
entertaining,
so,
but it's a gong shot.
It is a gong show, but I'll take it at this point. All right, lots of mail. We're kind of multifaceted here. We got Jagoff of the Year voting started. Mike Barker, our executive producer, is imploring us to name a winner tomorrow. Is that possible? Can we move it up to end of show Thursday? So we're going to alter that a bit, and we'll pick a winner by tomorrow, 12:30. We'll start the voting today, though. Steelers-Bengals, two-parter. Biggest fear, would it be Ben's recent interceptions or Antoine Blake or the running back situation? What has you worried the most? And also, Ben calling out Martavis Bryant, was it the right thing to do? He admits today that he pulled Bryant aside, thinks of him as a little brother. He wants him to step up. How important will Bryant be in the playoffs? SportsTalk at TribWeb.com. And, of course, the Penguins and Hawks reaction, too. Couple of JOTY votes. Tim is first in. He says, I would like Jake Arrieta. Stupid beard, stupid arm, stupid demeanor, all Jagoff worthy. Can you support the Arrieta vote?
Yes, it was his stupid arm. He means the clear that's rubbed on it? Is that what he means?
Hey, now. The Delta 2. Was he one of the trainers that was associated with the...
Yeah, I guess I really shouldn't say stuff like that because I can get sued by Ryan Howard and Ryan Zimmerman.
Yeah, I wonder if James Harrison is thinking about now jumping on... He said he was not going to. It was not financially worth it, but to fight for his name, will he jump on the anti-Al Jazeera lawsuit now?
Did he officially say it wasn't financially worth it?
Yeah, yes, he did.
That's what his agent told him. Bill Parise said, maybe Ryan Howard's got a lot more cash than James Harrison does. In fact, we pretty much know he does based on that contract he signed. Ben is with Tim, though. He's going to vote for Roger Goodell. Between the L.A. relocation fiasco, Deflategate, and just general aloofness, I think he is, in fact, an easy choice yet again this year. So Goodell officially gets one.
The botching of Deflategate is something that can't be ignored.
Greg Hardy, too, right? I mean, we'll throw that into the kettle. Allowing him, I guess they suspended him for a stretch, but I don't know. Is that one on Goodell, or that's more on Jerry Jones for employing the guy, I guess,
right,
than it is Goodell?
I'm just watching the highlights here, Ken, by the way, of the World Juniors. You know who the Penguins needed yesterday was Kasperi Kapanen.
Hmm. Oh, that was a great finish. He did like a looped around the goal and buried it.
He won it for Finland last night on a wraparound.
Against Russia, who had come back to tie it late. He hasn't played for Toronto yet, has he?
I don't think he has, no.
Kapanen? Okay. Sam says if we were going to take a weekly award for Jagoff of the Week, guys, it would have to be the Browns to me. You can't clear house every year or every other year. How can you give a coach a terrible team, which is weird considering how high they draft every year, and then expect the coach to work magic? I'm going to bet that in the next coach to be fired in the AFC North will be the Browns yet again. We are not taking weekly award solicitations, but it's a fine note. We had Daryl Ryder on from Cleveland yesterday, though, and he thinks it's the right move. I mean, he just said, you know, between the in-house sniping and it was like a toxic situation, and Jimmy Haslam had no choice. He had to make a change again.
Well, they could just hire Joe Torre as their next coach. If you're going to have a baseball guy run the front office, might as well have Torre be the coach.
Well, at that stage, might as well go all Moneyball guys and get Art Howe in, get Guy's buddy in. You know, if you've got the.
No, remember, Art didn't like Moneyball.
Oh, that's true. Jeff in Illinois talking Steelers. He says, guys, I have no faith. Maybe I'm a pessimist, but this game is set up for a loss. Backup quarterback, no playoff wins in a long time. What's the best cure for a struggling team these days? Play the Steelers. Lest we forget, Tim Tebow lit them up in the postseason. I think the Bungles are going to win this. I don't share that belief, Jeff, but...
I have a similar... I mean, everything on paper points to the Steelers, but I don't have a good feeling right now either. I think there's too much of this, they always win in Cincinnati, it's always the Bungles' attitude right now. And as I've been saying for a long time, I like playing a team better after they've beaten you the way they went and played the Bengals the last time. And the Bengals were the team that lost their cool. And we're worried about the extracurricular stuff. I haven't decided on who I'm picking yet, especially with the spread. But I don't have as great a feeling. I think a lot of people think this is an automatic Steelers win. It's not.
Yeah, you were feeling that way Monday right out of the gate, Guy. That gave me pause because you were in Cleveland. You saw it was ugly. It's not like they played real well there.
I'm very torn. There's no reason for me to believe that Ryan Mallett isn't the blueprint for what A.J. McCarron can do. Hopefully they look at their own blueprint for how they took out Austin Davis and they try to apply that to McCarron and force the issue on defense, but there are better people around McCarron than are around Austin Davis.
Mike emails. Mike says Jagoff of the Year has got to go to Roger Goodell again. He is a worthy repeat winner. Every controversial issue he handles poorly.
He is
the worst commissioner in the history of sports.
Look, people bumble things, you know, especially when you have a job with that much responsibility. Maybe you're not going to make it, but it seems like he gets too involved and screws it up, doesn't get involved enough and screws it up. It seems like he makes the wrong decision no matter what the issue is he's trying to handle. Ken, you know, from barely after he got hired, I said, this guy's in over his head. I mean, this is long before all this stuff even hit the fan. Just listening to him, watching him, I said, he is in over his head in this job.
Well, it's Dan Rooney's fault. He's the guy that promoted him. You know, if you want to blame somebody, blame Dan Rooney. Wasn't that his boy? I mean, am I misremembering that? That was the Rooney's handpicked guy. Washington and Jefferson's own.
Yeah.
They liked him. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they were alone in that.
Yeah, they don't have the power to just pick a guy and say, this is who we have. But
my guess is it's not like, you know, the Maras stepped in and said, no, I like somebody else, you know.
Not to mention it's these owners who were supporting him and keeping him in office to be their pincushion, you know. They're paying him millions and millions of dollars. He's doing a job, and he's doing it for these guys so they can look good. So Goodell takes all the venom. But it's Art Rooney, it's Wellington Mara. These are all the people that actually should deserve your hate for incompetence.
Right, but it's so easy to be hated and to be have darts thrown at you when you make billions and billions of dollars every year.
Yeah, but so do all these owners.
The owners. That's who I mean. Like, the owners are getting ridiculed for having a guy like this in power, but what do you care if you keep making billions of dollars? You know, at the very height of everything going wrong with the Hardy, Rice, Peterson stuff, and Deflategate just percolating, not even gotten to the Wells report stage yet, they signed the new TV contract.
Yeah, they did.
For tens of billions of dollars.
And he takes a lot of the deflected heat that perhaps could fall on various individual owners, so... In a way, he's a guy taking the arrows, making the money, and I'll leave him there. Let the media beat him up. Let the fans beat him up. We'll keep counting the money.
Concussion movie comes out, barely a tremor. Peyton Manning accused of HGH. Nah, no big deal. Like, nobody cares. This league is just indestructible, and just it keeps moving on and on.
And honestly, I think that the way Deflategate went down led to that in large part, because you know the national media responded with such vitriol initially about the Patriots, and when you found out how deceitful the NFL was in its preparation of the Wells report and the approach to the legal angle, I think a lot of national people who are critical of the Patriots ended up feeling guilty about it. Now there's this real pause to overreact to anything, whether it's the concussion movie or the Peyton HGH thing. It's like, you know, we don't believe the NFL in anything they say anyway, so maybe we just shouldn't react so big and, you know, look bad on the outside or on the ass end of it.
I think the one thing that could really keep them from being indestructible, Ken, of any kind of gambling or fixing thing has ever proven or really becomes, because it's such a gambling based league. I mean, as popular as the game is, we loved the game as kids watching it because of the violence, because of the game itself, the way it was played. The game is nowhere near as, I think, as attractive just for its own purposes as it was when we were younger. But you throw in fantasy football, you throw in high def television, fantasy leagues, all the kind of stuff, the ancillary stuff that goes around it, and it still remains extremely popular. Not just the plain betting on games. But if there was ever a real something like that the NBA went through with a referee, I think that would be the one thing that would turn people off, because so much of the interest is based on gambling.
Maybe, but it didn't derail the NBA, and you know.
But it's not a gambling based league. I mean, people gamble on everything, but if there wasn't fantasy football right now, I'd like to know what NFL ratings are.
Well, the steroid scandal killed baseball for a long time, right? I mean, I don't know if it killed it, but it definitely took a big starch out. Maybe the lockout was the bigger deal, I guess, than the steroid scandal. I should rephrase that. But it was a big deal in baseball, the Valco thing. We just had Al Jazeera put together a 50-minute introspective tape. You know, I mean,
I think that's the point, Ken. Sports are different, and for why people watch them, and the statistics and records of baseball are sacred to the people who and you messed with them. Well, in football, the gambling is sacred, and if you mess with that, that could be the steroids of baseball. And baseball people don't bet on baseball. If you find out it's somebody struck out on purpose because. Or like jogging George Hendricks said, this game ain't going extra innings. I'm going home, and promptly grounded out on the first pitch, and the game was over.
But people cared about the needle in the football. That was a huge deal.
Sure it was.
But needle in the arm, nobody cares.
No, and right. They care in baseball because they care more about the stats. I think they view football as a game played by behemoth gladiators in the arena, and they don't care how they get that way.
but don't touch the sacred football. How dare you have the deflated?
I mean, you know, the fact that the center and the guard and the defensive end are all on steroids doesn't have anything to do with Babe Ruth's 714 home runs. There's no statistic to judge their performance anyway.
Well, it does if half the Green Bay Packers were on steroids and they won the Super Bowl.
I don't believe fans look at it that way, Ken. You can argue
it. Well, half the Steelers were on steroids more than the other teams in the AFC that they were beating every year to go to the Super Bowl back in the 70s.
I know, but this is talking about the modern era where there are rules that are explicit against cheating, and there are, you know, HGH testing. And this,
well, I think that's a big part of it, Ken. Is like, you know, if you are beating the system, so much of living in America these days is about beating the system. You know, if you beat the system for a long time and you get around your steroid test, well, bully for you. And eventually, if you get caught, well, you get caught. You know, not that different from Martavis Bryant. You know, eventually he got caught and got caught enough that he got suspended. All right, you got caught. Sucks to be you.
These guys got caught and there's still no reaction. Well, allegedly caught. This guy in the Al Jazeera video, and now they found a trainer in Florida that they kind of verified the story. I don't know if you saw the New York Times thing yesterday. I mean, what's his name? Neil from the Packers is in the picture with the guy. Now, James Harrison was not associated with this Florida trainer, but seems pretty legit to me, and it's just like, it's a murmur. No, nobody cares. I mean, I see what you're saying. Like, do it until you get caught, and we assume everybody's guilty. But if you get caught, you expect a reaction. Like, Ryan Braun got caught. Now there's a reaction. He gets booed. But not if you're in the NFL. Nobody reacts.
I just think that the differences in the sports make you more upset about different issues with it, and I don't think steroids is that big in football, and I think it remains to be in baseball.
Yeah.
The sexiest baseball players have always been the home run hitters, and in football it's the quarterbacks. If you found some kind of drug that enhanced the guy's arm strength and let him throw better, and you found out some quarterbacks used and some didn't, I think that would be viewed differently. That would be viewed more like baseball.
Peyton F. Manning has been accused of HGH, and there's almost no discussion about it.
I think on the surface people wonder how HGH really helps a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, in his case, I guess it's the neck thing. You know, he's probably trying to heal more than he is trying to. But still, if he's putting 3 or 4 years on his career.
And I also think the general public attitudes, fans' attitudes, are know how, even more so than ever, how brutal the game of football is and the toll it takes on your body. And if that's what it takes for you to heal and continue to play and last a few years longer, a few games longer in a season, so be it. They look at baseball as a game that you don't need to do that, even though if you play it every day for 6 months, it beats the shit out of you too.
I do think a lot of this, Ken, has to do with the fact that the baseball thing got as big as it did. We have freaking hearings in Congress over it, and you learn how widespread and pervasive it was. It wasn't just Mark McGwire with Andro in his locker. It wasn't just Barry Bonds with the clear dripping off of his ass. It was everybody. Like, you were surprised if somebody wasn't on steroids. There was a link to everybody. It's almost been talked out at this point. And I think that's why you're getting the lack of reaction. You keep asking why is there not as much reaction as there should be. It's because we've all reacted to it already. I think we assume everybody's on steroids now.
I know, I do too, but we had such a big reaction for one cheating scandal, and this is a massive cheating scandal all the same, and there's no reaction to it. It is a double standard from that point of view.
He hasn't gotten caught with an NFL test yet. Like that's what is missing. That's the missing ingredient right now.
Yeah.
People ratting each other out in the media, I think we've become numb to it at this point. It's happened so often. Like I can't keep track anymore, literally, of who was in Balco, who was an A-Rod guy, who admitted to it, who was just linked to it, who had a positive that got leaked out that shouldn't have gotten leaked out, like Ortiz, and who actually did it. It's confusing at this point. It's almost like you just assume everybody's on it, and then you're stunned if you find out that they're not.
Let me ask you this. If Peyton Manning had been more successful of late, if he had won the last couple Super Bowls, would this be a bigger story? If he was the reigning
probably.
Super Bowl champion with Denver. Yeah. I think because he's seen as such a loser of late, maybe nobody cares for that reason.
Well, I think people, not as a loser, I think as a guy who's been, you know, beaten up and is hanging on by a thread to try to play at a late age, and I think they give a little nod to someone in that situation more than if he was 25 and trying to get an advantage over the the Colts for the next game that they're playing.
How many national outlets really picked up on the Alex Guerrero connection to Brady, Ken?
That's true, too.
You know, I mean, here's a winner. You know, here's a guy that's a pretty easy target, you would figure, on the heels of Deflategate. And that was, you want to use the word murmur? That was a murmur outside of Boston. You know, they had the front page story in the Globe.
There's no steroid accusation directly, but it's like he's a strange doctor, right? He's a naturopath who's
yeah, but didn't he get concussion wasn't he connected to A-Rod? Wasn't Guerrero an A-Rod guy?
Oh, was he? Okay, maybe. See, maybe I haven't done my homework on that.
I mean, think about, would it really turn you off that one of your, pick a favorite movie star, male, female, or a rock band, would the Beatles have been as creative? Would you have enjoyed their lyrics and music much if they weren't experimenting with LSD? Does that bother you in that walk of life?
Well, but it's not cheating. Like, this is, you want a balanced playing field in a sporting event, you know? You want to have a feeling that everybody's on the same level.
Well, I think that's another part of it. I agree with what you think. I'm just telling you why fans, I think, have the general feeling the way they are and why it's not the same for each sport. I think most people think that most football players do use or experiment with them. Just look at them. You know, when I was 20 years old, if I lifted weights and jogged and worked out 12 hours a day, I couldn't get as big or look like some of these guys do. You know there's something going on. And look, come on, we've all, I'm not going to mention any names, but everyone, all four of us right here have seen some ex-Steelers in the last 5 years that you look at them and say, what the hell?
Right, right.
After they're done playing.
Even Jeter, let's go back to baseball guy. You have a ton of respect for Derek Jeter, right, as you said on the show.
Right.
Nicest guy, I mean, career is unmatched almost in terms of length. The New York Times just found a link between this guy, Charlie Sly, in this documentary, and Derek Jeter, his longtime trainer from Florida, who, revitalized his body over the last 5 years. Does it matter? I mean, that
he looks. How did he revitalize it? Was it with illegal stuff, or?
Well, I mean, that's not totally known, but, I mean, it's like, if this guy and Charlie Sly were tight, if you watch the Al Jazeera video, this guy knew every doping method possible. The one doctor called him the doping guru or something. I mean, come on. Derek Jeter looks so guilty this morning. I don't know. People get tired of this talk, and I do myself. I mean, you get too down the steroid well, and it gets...
The sports are viewed differently, and what people expect out of them are viewed differently, and what people get out of them are viewed differently, which is why the various issues are, you know, was it that big of a deal in Colorado when they talked about some of the balls were in a humidor when the Rockies were batting, or when the other team was batting, and they weren't in a humidor when the Rockies were batting? That kind of went by the wayside, but the inflated football thing was huge. Yet steroids in baseball was a huge thing, but it's not in football.
Yeah.
Gambling in basketball, you know, the people weren't happy about it, but it survived it. If that gambling thing came up in the NFL, I think it would be because more people bet on football than anything else. I just think it's, you get different things out of different sports. You have different types of fans for different sports. Football's not a game quite so much about records as it is about watching the brutality of the game and winning championships. Baseball individual records mean a ton to the people who follow it. And if you follow it for years and those records are sacred to you, and you find some guy, you know, one guy that who is breaking a record of a guy who fueled himself on hot dogs and beer, and the guy that's breaking it now is using a synthetic hormone, then I just don't think they compare.
Yeah. Well, then Derek Jeter, Mr. November, people should care. Jim in Latrobe. Roger Goodell for Jackoff of the Year. Lots of reasons. Overpaid buffoon on so many levels. By the way, congrats on year number 6 of Trib Live Radio. Thank you, Jim. Goodell off and running for the Jackoff of the Year vote. Breadman in Penn Hills, give me the puck stealer guy. That's my J-O-T-Y. In regards to the Steelers, I'm glad somebody in the organization had the balls to call out a player instead of kissing ass and handling with kid gloves. Maybe Roethlisberger's title should be expanded to coach as well. It would be nice if this head coach would hold people more accountable than he does. The quarterback does it often. That obviously in regards to the Martavis Bryant stuff. Well, Tomlin did. You asked Tim. Did you ask Tomlin about Martavis yesterday?
I didn't know, but he did
react to it. He did kind of call him out a little bit as well. Said he wasn't on the details, right? Lack of detail in his play.
Yeah, lack of detail was the phrase.
He kind of was giving him an excuse because he was injured all week and, you know, missed some practice. Does Breadman have a point? Is it refreshing to see you know, the quarterback be a quote unquote leader and try to light a fire under a guy here? I guess I could buy that. It could go one of two ways, though. It could go the other way. And
well, yeah, I think that is more a coach's job than the quarterback's, even though the quarterback is a leadership position. I mean, if somebody here were screwing off or coming in late every day, I would think that Mike Barker's a guy that should take them. I shouldn't have to pull Tim aside and say, hey, dude, we start the show at 10 o'clock.
Right.
You know, Mike Barker should do that. Well, Tim's the first one in here every day. You know what I mean? I just maybe that's a bad comparison. I just think the leader is the guy that should, you know, I'm not going to tell my brother, hey, the streetlights are on, you were told to be in. That's my mother's job to do that.
Another puck schmuck vote. Chris and Erie, I forgot about the fat ass stealing the kid's puck.
Yeah, that's taking candy from a baby. That is as shitty a thing as I've seen on TV in a long time, man. That's high on my list.
This is going to come down
to Goodell. Even though there's no real impact to it, it just, you know.
It's going to come down to Goodell and this puck schmuck. I got a feeling. I mean, I could be proven wrong here.
I got a feeling. Well, I'll tell you what. Josh has a great one. He revealed it to me last night. Why don't you jump in and just throw it out there before too many votes go. If you have
this
an idea.
This is dangerous. You're bringing him in before noon.
No, well,
like,
just for a second.
It's like putting water on a gremlin.
Because I'm considering going this way. He has me
water
convinced.
On a gremlin.
Red lights! And definitely don't feed me after midnight. That's all I'm saying.
Especially not a calzone.
Not at all. I floated this out last night because you issued the warning to us yesterday to start getting our Jag Off of the Year candidates ready.
Yes, I did.
And you might know where I'm going with this one because I felt pretty passionately about this one when it happened. I want to say he was nominated for a week. I don't know if he won. But especially after we found out what happened with him last week and how his team tried to at least gloss it over and make it look like something else. My Jag Off of the Year candidate is Johnny Manziel.
Mm.
You only get so many shots to do what he's doing right now.
Blonde wig, mustache.
And he might be,
it's ridiculous.
And he might be blowing all the shots that he's getting to go to Vegas with a wig on and do more shots.
The only question I have is the guy an alcoholic, and does he have a serious problem? And do you have some sympathy for him if that's the case? I mean, he was in rehab after all. I mean, this stuff doesn't happen unless you've got some serious issues, right? I mean, it's a good vote. Like, the body.
Well, you don't get voted Jag Off of the Year unless you've got some serious issues. So.
I guess.
I hear what you're saying.
And I am not one to make light or make humor of an issue of addiction or alcoholism for that matter.
Right.
But at the same time, and I brought this up at the time when I said what I said about it before, the pattern of repeated behavior over and over and over again. Remember around this time last year was the end of last season when they were starting to grow a little bit more impatient with him. And all of that has actually transpired in the calendar year of 2015. All of it.
Just because the Steelers just played them and I was just in Cleveland and you're affected by all this, you're looking at a guy like Mike Pettine, their general manager. They lose their jobs in large part because of this guy's inability to grow up. You got Joe Thomas saying, this is the best coach we've had since I've been here, and I may rethink about whether I want to stay here or not. Their best player, what, 9 straight all-pro seasons or whatever he's had?
Never missed a game.
And never, I think he's missed a snap.
Never missed a snap.
And this guy's thinking of the effects. We saw a glimpse of what Manziel's talents can do when he played in Pittsburgh. He had a pretty good game. You know, the Steelers won handily, but he was pretty gutsy.
Yeah,
you know, took some hits and kept going and threw for some yardage and ran for some yardage. And he's pissing it away and he's screwing up other people's lives in the process. That's why I'm on board with it as a candidate.
I'll point out one more thing and I'll disappear back into the ether. Darryl Ryder, Ken, you were there yesterday when Darryl was talking to us about it.
Yeah.
The Browns have been dabbling in analytics for a while now. Going into that draft, they had a couple of quarterbacks ranked ahead of Johnny Manziel. They had Teddy Bridgewater, who was available. They had Derek Carr, who was available. And against their own research, against their own scouting, they went with Johnny Manziel.
They went with the homeless guy.
They went with what the homeless guy suggested and told the owner to draft Manziel.
Well, that's Jimmy Haslam then.
Granted, that's true, but the Browns went against their own good information and their own good logic and drafted this guy, and it cost a couple of people their jobs in the long run with everything that came with it. So
well,
that's
my piece. I hate to say it. You've just gotten two Manziel votes on your side. Dan just agreed with you, and we
Well, that's why I didn't want him to sit on it for 2 days, because if people weren't thinking of him, I think it's a worthwhile candidate to throw out there.
By the way, Ken, the guy I was thinking of wasn't Guerrero with Brady. It was Pressinall with Pedro. That's what I was
–
the trainer, Angel Pressinall. He was linked with –
with Pedro Martinez.
Yeah, Pedro and A-Rod and Ortiz.
Okay. Let me just finish Dan's email. We'll get to a pause, and Rossi will be joining us here in a moment. Dan says, my biggest worry in the Steelers game, guys, is their front seven. I think the Bengals are going to rely heavily on Hill and Bernard to take the pressure off McCarron. Beyond that, the Steelers' D has been just up and down when pressuring quarterbacks, and I don't think they can afford to not show up on Saturday. So that's his biggest worry for Steelers-Bengals. Taking your biggest fear, taking your big-picture analysis of the Penguins, plus your reaction to 3-on-3 overtime last night. And Jagoff of the Year voting continues to roll in. We'll select a winner tomorrow, but a two-day spirited vote expected. Rob Rossi will join us next. We'll talk to Rossi about the Penguins' recent play. He's been pretty down on this franchise for a number of years. Does he see any light at the end of that tunnel? We know he's bullish on the Steelers. How about the Penguins of late? Trib columnist Rob Rossi joins us next.
You don't need to face criminal charges alone. Call me, Frank Walker, 412-532-6805.
Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta, located on 6th Street in downtown Pittsburgh. Fast and free delivery. Give them a call at 412-281-7060. Lunch special starting at just $7.49 with selections including small grilled chicken salad, a bowl of soup, two cuts of pizza and a small garden salad, penne pasta, garlic bread and a small salad, half a hoagie and french fries or half a hoagie and a can of pop. That's 412-281-7060. You can even order online. Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta in downtown Pittsburgh and online at ilovegiovannis.com.